Mr. Sullivan.
Yes, Mr. Jackson, I'm reporting for duty.
Oh, I don't even know where to start. It's moving so fast, Dan.
Well, then it's always going to be moving fast, so it's normal.
It's perfect. It's good. Well, I think that the big thing everybody is anticipating is what is happening with the big who, not how to do. Everything is moving very quickly, exceeding expectations, taking the world by storm.
Yeah, well, I'll know a little bit more exactly because on Tuesday I have a Zoom call with Reed Tracy at Hay House, and I think they have the most, you know, they, it's their business, so I think they have the most up-to-date numbers. But I know I'm pretty sure that we're in the, you know, the low 100,000 right now.
That's so crazy, Dan.
Yeah. Well, I'm sticking to the formula, you know, that this is what Who Not How actually does, that when you create a Who Not How collaboration, and it works for everybody, then everything works.
Yeah, I think this is I think this is great. I mean, it's so amazing to see this come to life, you know, and see the most satisfying thing is kind of to see the perplexed look on their face when you tell them that you're not making any money from the book. That you know, I mean, the whole thing is just,
Why do you think that, is? I mean, because I think I've been sort of, you know, I've been sort of working on the model since probably my collaboration with Peter Diamandis, you know, so it goes back to about 2013, you know, is the first date. And, I remember the perplexity when people said, well, how is that going to possibly work? And I said, well, first of all, I get access to a very, very high level of capability who's got enormous reach out in the world. So you use your VCR. And I said, and I know it's going to have, you know, kind of an effect by osmosis that my team is going to be there every year. And they're going to be, you know, they're going to be imbibing, you know, how to think about high technology, exponential technology. And I think that, you know, they're just going to start feeling kind of normal about bringing exponential technology into strategic coach. But the other thing is I get an added dimension to the strategic coach program where 150 to 200 of the strategic coach clients get, you know, a deep dive into technology. And I think that's going to have a very positive effect. And the way I'm looking at it, that extra dimension doesn't cost me anything.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You get a front row, you know, almost like, there's nothing, it's all wins. And I think that that demonstrates where that really comes from is your idea of cash confidence too, that it's not that you don't need the money from this. Your business is already, producing all the cash or all the things. And you look at this as an opportunity to enhance that business as well. You know, that's really where it comes from. You said something that I've only heard you say a couple of times, but the business monogamy, and that was that's an interesting way of looking at it too, because you're all these things that you're doing, you're not getting seduced into other, you're not operating other businesses or other units. You're enhancing someone else's already. They're running all the logistics of the of the business. You're staying in yours.
Yeah, and I think it's just a it's partially a a personal trait on my part. I'm kind of like a one commitment kind of guy. You know, for my personal life and my my business life. So I wouldn't push it too much further than this is just the way I like it. You know, I mean, but the thing is that it does give my team over, you know, we're into the our fourth decade of coach right now, and it does give them a lot of, and they tell me that it gives us a lot of reassurance that everything that you're working on involves us. You know, you're not taking business trips and involving yourself in other businesses. And even where you do have outside interests, you're bringing the capability back to strategic coach. In other words, whatever capability comes out of it comes back to coach. And part of it is I just like living a simple life. And I've seen people who have five or 10 businesses. And the business, because they're legally involved, they're financially involved in these other businesses, they have to attend meetings by virtue of their investment and their involvement. They have to attend meetings, and they're they're communicating, you know, even with the ones that are, you know, they're not actually running the businesses, but they're an investment partner, and they're required by virtue of their investment to be involved in those businesses. And I just can't do that. You know, I can't sleep at night. I want to read my novels. I want to get a full night's sleep, and I don't want to be thinking about some other business.
After hours or your other. And that's an interesting thing, because a lot of entrepreneurs at your level or your stage in the business are, I mean, at 76 years old, certainly halfway, almost halfway to your 156, you're acting like someone who's only halfway to where they're going, as opposed to acting like someone who's on the swan song or, you know, kind of removing themselves from the business.
The other thing, and this is an interesting idea that I've been pondering, that just another aspect of someone in my position, like if you were looking at a 76-year-old, who, you know, is they're not creating new things for their central business. That's one thing. They did that 25, 30 years ago, and they've been riding on the passive success of their business. The other aspect is they're involving themselves in all sorts of charitable in their life outside of business. You know, they belong to this foundation. They belong to the, you know, they're on the board of this charity, and they're on the board of that charity. And I said, who would I rather contribute my extra capability to? Would I have extra capability to, you know, kind of organizations that actually grade themselves on how much money they raise, or would I rather involve myself in helping entrepreneurs who have really, really exciting free zone enterprises, you know, and I can give that my time. My time's worth a lot. I mean, I can show you, I said, just divide my time into, you know, the annual revenue, and I'll tell you what an hour of my time is worth. And, and I said, but it makes more sense for me to give my voluntary, like I have a voluntary spirit. I would rather direct my voluntary spirit to helping an entrepreneurial enterprise grow than some charitable organization that's very murky, and it's mostly has to do with social status, as far as I can see. You know, you get your name on something that, you know, the front of the program when the symphony orchestra or the opera or the, you know, plays. And I say, well, there again, I'd have to think about it. You know, it's something I'd have to think about. And people would want me to invite me to all sorts of social events that I don't want to go to. And actually, COVID's been a great, COVID has actually been a great, filter.
Yes.
Because you just can't attend those type of, you just can't attend those type of meetings.
Oh yeah, no, I love it. I've been saying to people, Dan, that COVID has actually, you know, given, made my preferred lifestyle mandated. That's the greatest thing. I mean, that's really what it's come down to, you know?
So you thought he was weird, huh? This was your impression that he was weird? Well, take a look in the mirror right now. Check your schedule for next week and see how weird he is. You know?
Oh man.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing, and I was the past week was a free week for me, so I just dived into a lot of novels, and I'm reading a whole series of kind of homicide, espionage, intrigue, treason, yeah. Novels about the British during the Second World War.
Yeah.
Okay. And I mean, I have to tell you, the Nazis are good forever as a fictional
evil villain. Fiction. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is the gift to fiction that just keeps on giving. You know, I mean, it's there's no end to the bad things that you could suspect that they were up to. You know, and a lot of it's really true. But one of the things is it's right during the early part of the British War. So they're going through the nightly bombing by the German bombers, and they have lights out, they have curfews, and, you know, people are in their shelters. And I said, you know, and they had rationing too. They were rationing food, they were rationing, everything was rationed, gasoline was rationed, now they're rationing clothing. And I said, you know, we're kind of going through a period of rationing, and we're kind of under martial law. You know, if you think about it, you know, I mean, it's gentler than what they were going through because there's, you know, bombings and violence and everything like that. But I would say right now, the social distancing is a form of rationing, you know, that people are being rationed. Yeah.
Yes.
And now they're, you know, they're talking about you can't have anyone over for Thanksgiving, you know, like.
Right.
And it's a foolish law because it can't be policed. You know, it really can't be policed, you know.
Right.
Don't make laws you can't police.
Yeah.
If you can't enforce the law, don't make the law because it just.
Yeah. What are they going to go door to door looking at your, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we were up north for Canadian Thanksgiving, which for those who aren't familiar, Canada has an equally important. I mean, it's got the same spirit about it as American Thanksgiving. It's just that it happens it's on Columbus Day in the United States, so second Monday in October. And we were up, and we live up in cottage country, and we were invited over for Thanksgiving, where we've gone three or four times. But usually there's about 20 people there, and there was, you're not supposed to have more than 8, but we had 9. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
We'll edit this portion out of the broadcast.
We'll just edit that out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And anyway, but it was a good Thanksgiving. But it's a form of rationing and kind of the mentality of people of not being detected or caught, you know, getting extra.
It's like prohibition era.
Yeah, very much so. And I said, you know, it's very, very interesting because everybody going forward will have this as a memory, like prohibition, like the Depression, like the war rationing. We'll think of this afterwards, probably with the same amount of historic significance.
Yes. And it's very, you know, it's an interesting thing to be in the middle of this right now and realize how quickly time goes. Like, I look at it now. So March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, we're in our ninth month of this now. And you realize, so that's basically most of 2020 under this situation.
Under this regime.
That is probably also going to be most of 2021 will be like this. And, you know, if you read all the and follow all the news, reports is not anywhere near a peak yet of what's happening. And we may peak in February or March.
Yeah, you'll notice what the news is not talking about anymore, the news media, is the deaths from the virus. And the reason is because people are catching it like they catch the flu. The ones who are going to die because their immune system was down have died, you know. So it's pretty clear now that 99% of the people who died first of all, they were elderly. You know, 99% over the age of 65. And among those, it was 99% weakened immune systems, you know, so they had something. And they were at the edge, even under normal times, and this put them, because it's, you know, it's a real attack on the body, and the body just couldn't fight back. You know, this is.
Have we had anybody aside from David Berg that we know has had COVID in Strategic Coach?
There's been out of the total maybe half dozen that I know. We haven't had anybody in the company yet, so we have 110. You know, in the UK, in the United States, in Canada, and nobody's gotten sick. We haven't had anybody who is sick. But here's the thing, that usually we have quite a number in the course from March until November who have had the flu, and nobody's had the flu.
Okay, well,
so I don't know. You know, I just don't know. You know,
is anybody working in the office now?
Yeah, we have three or four shipping because we're getting orders for our products and our books, and somebody has to be there to pick receive FedEx packages and UPS packages, I've gone in. I'll be going in tomorrow. And I'll be going in on Tuesday because we have certain recordings where it just works a lot better if it's a studio quality recording.
Right.
Yeah, so I'll be there tomorrow afternoon. I'll be there on Tuesday morning. Yeah,
my point about that is that in the context of a 25-year framework. This is going to be a minor portion of the 25 years when you look at it like that. And it may not be the only thing in the 25 years. I mean, there may be another, you know what I'm saying? It's like, just like.
Do you remember how good things were back during COVID days?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, before the nuclear weapons started going off.
Right.
I mean, the Peter Zion, you know, I've been a big fan of this writer, this Jew.
Yes.
And he said that, and I got a real indication of it. He said that the globalization theory, you know, was that all the countries in the world are in the same system, and you know, you might as well forget about borders because they don't really matter. I was noticing we got a email in from somebody in Serbia, and he couldn't get who, not how.
Couldn't get a copy of the book.
Because there's no FedEx to Serbia anymore. FedEx doesn't deliver to Serbia.
Oh my goodness.
I said, oh, that's interesting. I said, that's interesting.
That's interesting.
Because what Peter Zion, who wrote the book, This United Nation, said, that gradually all those countries that kind of could pretend they were part of the global system are going to find out that the global system has kind of disconnected from them. And
oh, wow.
FedEx is a good one of those interesting indicators to tell you whether you're in the global system or not. If you can't send FedEx or get FedEx, you're probably not in the global system anymore.
That's interesting.
So we told them, you know,
can't disconnect from cloud landing.
They could still get audible. They could still get audible.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what I mean. There's no delays in Cloudlandia.
No, but the physical, in the mainland, they're disconnected. You know,
yes.
His country is disconnected. I mean, I think FedEx is kind of an indicator. I mean, you can't get a FedEx package. I mean,
yeah.
And even here's another one, as FedEx only works, you can only contact FedEx from 8:30 to 4:30.
Wow.
They have no answering service from 8:30 outside of 8:30 in the morning till 4:30 in the afternoon here in Toronto.
Right.
Yeah. And I said, you're a 24/7 global business, and you're. And I said, another indication that things are disconnecting.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you don't have Cloudlandia capabilities, it's time to get moving.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah, it's time to get moving. And looking back, you're saying the next 25 years. I think that the this will be remembered for the virtual crossover.
Mm-hmm.
COVID will be remembered for the virtual crossover. I think that will be the more lasting capability. I think the other thing is I'm doing podcasts with Peter Diamandis in a few days, and I was putting down we trade our ideas of possible topics that we're going to talk about, and there's two of them which I think are. One is that I think that the vaccine program, in other words, to come through with the vaccine, is equal to the Apollo project in the 1960s. And I think it's kind of falling into the same category that it's part of the Cold War. And that the Apollo
the
project
arms race.
Was...
The arms race.
The arms race.
Yeah, the vaccine
the arms race.
Race. Yeah.
The vaccine race is part, and it just shows you how the world has changed that now, and that the Chinese are the opponent of choice right at the moment.
Yeah.
I can imagine, people are imagining all sorts of bad things about the Chinese, like they used to imagine all sorts of bad things about the Soviets.
About the Russians, there was a great segment on 60 Minutes last week about the general in charge of this operation that is to get the virus or the vaccine ready for 300 million people. And it's they're, you know, have spent billions of dollars on getting everything prepared, and they're ready for deploying as soon as they get the go. And
yeah,
that's a pretty pretty fascinating thing. I'm wondering,
it's almost like Colonel Groves, you know, Leslie Groves was the general who was in charge of the Manhattan Project for the atomic bomb during the Second World War.
Yeah,
and, I mean, if there was ever a guy who had power. I tell you, the guy who ran the atomic bomb project had really, really had power, you know, and he delivered, yeah. You know, he delivered. And it's kind of funny you'd have a general in charge, because I think that's, it's sort of a military, it's sort of, you need that type of work. You know, people who are used to giving orders and being obeyed down the line are the, you know, and, you know, essentially the country is kind of under martial law right now.
Yeah,
in relationship to this,
but it's going to be a really interesting. It's going to be an interesting thing when the vaccine. I don't know. Like, their biggest problem is the popular acceptance of the vaccine. That in polling, people are not that excited about.
No. I think it's
of yeah.
And the whole thing is, I mean, I have doctors in the program who are entrepreneurs, and they said, I don't want to be in the first takers of the new vaccine.
Right. That's what I'm wondering. Right.
Is this based on past experience? And they said, I defer to my Fifth Amendment rights here.
You know? Yeah, right. I mean, that's, yeah, I'm good. You go ahead and try it first. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We know they all work, that all pharmaceuticals work best in the first 6 months. You know that, don't you?
I did not know that.
Yeah. Virtually every pharmaceutical works best in the first 6 months because of the placebo effect on both the part of the doctors and the patients.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that makes sense.
They believe that they're excited and they believe. And
yeah.
That helps the vaccine. That adds extra power to the vaccine, whatever it is, the pharmaceutical.
Yeah. That's crazy. Well, this is, I mean, you look at it though, and I think definitely just as the, you know, the changes that we had to make in after 9/11 have remained and are just absorbed into our natural thing. Well, of course we go through double security and take off your shoes and your belt and your everything and go through, you know, security when you fly. Of course you do. That's just natural, right? Compared to just walking right up to the plane, you know.
People used to meet you at the
gate. Yes.
When you came off the plane, they were. Wait. I remember it was a real problem in Toronto because, you know, in some cultures like Middle Eastern cultures and Asian cultures, 200 relatives would be there for one person. You know.
Yeah.
And they finally had to make rules that you couldn't have that many people at the gate. You know.
Uh-huh. And,
yeah, I remember I was in Hawaii, and this was this would have been after 9/11, and I was flying from the island of Lanai to Honolulu. So we were finishing a vacation trip, and we were flying from Lanai, and they just had a small plane, and so we went to the airport in Lanai, one on the island, and we were. You know, we checked in, and then we just walked out to the plane. And I said,
"Yeah."
I said, "Something's wrong here. Something's wrong here." And I said, you know, there was a pilot or somebody at the, you know, you would climb the stairs to get in. I don't even know if we climbed the stairs. I think it was really a small plane, like it was a 6-seater, And I said, there's no security. And they said, well, where are they going to fly to?
Right.
He says, if somebody hijacked the plane, he said, where are they going to fly to? There's no. But I remember the eerie feeling that something was wrong when I was walking on the runway. I said, something's wrong. There's.
Oh, boy.
It's like the big elephant that walks away from a steak, you know, like
right. Yeah, we're not supposed to, yeah, right. That's it. That's funny.
I've gone way beyond the leash.
Oh man,
It shows you the leashes are in our nervous system. The leashes aren't,
wired in.
The real leashes are inside. They're not outside.
Yeah, they're wired in. That's something, it's like, I always used to think, because there's still remnants. Remember when SARS was a big thing in Hong Kong and in Asian
Toronto.
Countries and even in Toronto, but not to the extent that it was there, where you see, even over the last several years, you would still see, if you were ever at the airport and you see people in a mask, you would notice that in Asian cities and places like that, it was much more common to wear a face mask.
Hey, I was in Korea in 1965, 1966, and almost everybody wore masks. And that was just because of pollution.
Oh, I see.
They just had, everything burned by coal. And, you just really had bad pollution.
Wow.
And whatnot. Yeah. Yeah. So they're pretty used to it.
Hmm. Well, Dan, I had an amazing who, not how breakthrough this week. And I'm going to share it with you because I think it's a game changer for me.
Yes.
I was speaking on Wednesday at a virtual summit that Bill Glazer is putting on. He used to be partners with Dan Kennedy, old marketing guy.
Yep.
I don't know if you know Bill.
I remember at a certain point it was Glazer
Kennedy. That's right.
Glazer Kennedy. Yeah.
Bill Glazer. Yeah. He was the guy that really, like, when Dan partnered up with him, he was definitely Dan's who that was able to take Dan's stuff and really, like,
Didn't the private equity company buy into that?
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah. That Dan, but that without Bill Glazer, there would have been no private equity because there was no driving organizer.
There was no multiplier.
There was no multiplier. He was the multiplier to Dan's stuff, for sure. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, he's got a summit coming on this week. And he, several months ago, asked me to come and present about referrals. And the thing about it is, normally when I do these, it's live and I can talk for 45 minutes about referrals just off, going through the whole thing. Now, but this was different. You had to, because it's a summit and on a, recorded thing, I had to send my presentation ahead of time. So I had to you already see where this is going, right?
Yeah, well, good luck with that.
I love how you laugh like that. That's the best. So I started thinking, it's coming up to the deadline for it, and I still hadn't done anything yet, and I started thinking to myself.
Well, the truth is, you hadn't applied yourself, Dean.
I hadn't applied myself. That's exactly right. And I started thinking of journaling about this, doing some therapy with myself, because still here, 54 years old, I'm still at the, coming up to this resistance. And again, realizing it's the how, not the who. That's the problem here, right? Because I don't want to, build out the keynote slides and do all of that, organize, outline everything that it takes, all of those steps, when I can articulate exactly what I'm going to say. I know what I want to say. I know the material. And I really started thinking, okay, if I really just truly take a who, not how approach to this, is who could do this for me? And what is it that I really want to have happen with this. Like I said, I wish I could just do it live because I could do it live. I could talk for the whole thing. And so I said, well, would it be possible? What if I just recorded the audio of it? What if I just did the 45 minutes? Say what I want to say. Do, you know, because I can articulate my thoughts and I can get everything out in a coherent way. And then have a who take that and create a keynote slide to match what I said, rather than create the keynote and then do the presentation over top of it. So I did just that. I outlined my favorite things are to brainstorm and outline. And I brainstormed what I want to say. I got the arc, I got the track to run on, because I really had to time it kind of to get to 45 minutes. It had to be exactly 45 minutes because they're running a tight ship on that. And so I was able to do it and recorded it all in one take. And just like I'm doing, I'm sitting in exactly the chair that I'm sitting in right now. I had my iPhone and my headset, and I just recorded a voice memo of the entire 45 minutes. And then I sent it over to Lacey, one of my who's. She's a unicorn who. And I just gave her the thing of, I asked her first whether she could do the thing. And I sent her one of my ideas versus execution short audios that I had done. And she created this amazing, slide, keynote movie around it. And I said, that's it. Now I'm free of this.
Yes.
So I recorded the 45 minutes. I sent it over to her. The next day, I get this most beautiful, amazing 45-minute video that is exactly what I would have wanted, you know? And now I have a brand new capability that I can do only the thing that I can do. I can talk, I can brainstorm, I can outline and record. That's my mode right there. And so now, endless capabilities, endless possibilities with that capability.
The interesting thing about that is I'm just kind of applying, you know, the overview of Who Not How to your experience right there.
Yeah.
And again, it was procrastination that triggered something. You know, I mean, you were procrastinating, and I think it. Something just occurred to me as you were talking about it, that it's the resistance of your present self knowing who you want your future self to be against an aspect of your past self, because the past self would be the accumulation of knowledge that Bill Glazer wanted you to present, but because he's got to run a conference, he says, in order for me to feel good about it, I've got to know ahead of time what you're doing, and you got to have proof, you know. And that's his business, and he's looking at it. He's looking at it that way because he doesn't want to be nervous about what's going to happen during this conference. You know,
that's right. When you've got multiple speakers, how many things could go wrong? Less things go wrong if you've got all the presentations already done. Makes sense.
Yeah. And the thing is that I'm noticing more and more that both of us have an extreme sensitivity of not using up our present time with vast achievements.
Yes. That makes sense. It does.
In other words, it seems for me to go back over this is a bit of a waste of my time. You know, like I don't like my time. One of my, I would say that one of my present pleasures is always that I'm not wasting my time with something I've already done.
Yes. Yes. I really love that. You know, that's really the big thing is that I felt like that. Like, so I was doing the final session. I was doing a Breakthrough Blueprint event, a virtual event.
Yeah.
And so we do 2 days, and then about 30 days later, we do a follow-up, 2-hour session to talk about referrals and just catch up on what's been going on. And when we went, I had just gotten this back from Lacey. And so I was started to explain to these guys the thing. And I pressed play to show that I was just shared my screen to show them the video. And I realized that, wow, this is exactly what I would be saying right now if I was, but now it's like I've captured it and theoretically, I don't have to say those words anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I predict something that's going to happen?
Tell me.
As you're giving your totally prepared talk.
Yeah.
At the conference, which has already happened last Wednesday, I bet you thought of some new things.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We'll see. It's this Wednesday.
This coming Wednesday. It's this coming Wednesday.
Okay. I had to hand it in last Wednesday.
That's but the now thing, being right. Now that being totally confident about the past that you can deliver. You can now, I mean, your ability to improvise right now is probably freed up enormously.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah. It's kind of funny with the Who Not How, the book, you know, the major market book that's out doing its work out in the marketplace right now, that we both know the history of this. And then I had the little book, quarterly book that I did. And then Ben Hardy simply used the little book and he interviewed me on it. We did a series of about 10 interviews on it. And then he wrote the major market book based on that. And then, he had to do the audio version and he did it word for word to what he had written, which I can't do.
Oh yeah, that's a skill. I mean, just to be able to read. Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
the audio version, I've read the book and I've listened to the audio version, but I'm skipping some of the chapters to the interviews with you and Ben after the chapters on the audio version.
Yeah, because
Got everything. I've got the Kindle version. Yeah. I've got the print version, and I've got the Audible.
It's just it's just the text. But then Ben picked 8 places where he would interview me.
Yeah,
you know, and I just did it off the top, you know.
Yeah,
And he says, "Oh, we're adding all sorts of dimensions." And I said, "Yep. That's what happens because this is what happens with the quarterly book things is that I do a fast filter on each chapter, and then Shannon Waller interviews me on the fast filter, and the fast filter is the guide to the text, but it's also the guide to the cartooning. So I create the fast filter, and Hamish and I, we're into our book for March right now. Uh-huh. And the name of this book is Innovation Over Envy. I'm showing a sharp distinction between those who deal with the unequalness of things in the world by innovating, yes, and those who deal with the unequalness of things in the world by being envious. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing that, and we're already into our fourth chapter, but we won't start the actual interview process with Shannon for another week and a half, according to the schedule. So I'll be probably into six. I'll have more than half the book finished in the fast filter, and the cartoonings will be ahead. So the cartooning is now faster, which is really interesting. It's interesting because I'm translating words into pictures first before, and but it seems to get better, and then it gets written by another writer who knows the format. It's four pages, and you know, it follows a fast filter overview, and then he listens to the he's blind, so he's a blind writer. So he does this through Braille and through there's lots of technology that happens to him. Yeah, he's actually blind since 15. He's in his early 30s, but he's blind. But he taught himself to be a writer, you know, and he can listen to things. But there's a thing that takes the transcription and puts it into Braille, and he just sits there and reads it with his fingers. He reads it.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, and then it gets edited, and then we get the final copy, and then Shannon interviews me again, but it's not word for word. She just picks up the finished copy, and then she asks me all sorts of questions about the finished copy, and then I give a new interpretation. So, yeah, I know the feeling. If somebody said, you read this word for word or we shoot Dean, I would read it word for word.
Well, thank you for that.
No, I just want to let you know.
Yes, thank you.
In that sort of extreme situation, I would read word for word. And I would
do the same for you, Dan.
I would be on my best. You know, I would have my happy device.
Punctuation perfect, as they say. Yes.
Just let you know.
Oh, but I mean, I just feel like, you know, that's a great thing, but you're right about the procrastination. I'm starting to see that procrastination, although it's gotten labeled and we've uncovered for the last several years, the whole thing, how it's a superpower, a good thing. But I think it's really our built-in, you know, prioritization protocol that just is automatically running at all times to keep us sharp on what our top priorities are. We don't need to write them down or anything. It's storing right in. All we need to do is ask.
Yeah. I mean, when I say, you know, you think about it, there's a reason why I think that conformity got a bad name. Okay. Or not conformity, but procrastination, and it had to do with conformity. And that is that up until very recently, we really didn't have enough to eat, you know, and everybody had to be about the business of making sure the food supply was there. And, you know, I mean, there were just life in the balance type of issues that humans in community had to do. And whether you like doing something or not, you had to do it because others depended upon you doing it. And technology has come in and taken the guarantee, which was totally on the heads of human beings, and has put it into a technological form. So I think we're in a crossover period right now between the need to have conformity of human behavior and innovation, okay? And we're right at the point now where being rewarded for innovation has jumped ahead of being rewarded for conformity. And I think it's happened within the last 30 or 40 years. I think this crossover between how human beings will get rewarded has moved from the conformity side of the line to the, and but feeling guilty about procrastination is the way that you brought pressure on people to conform.
I think that's true. I wonder when, like how, I wonder if it goes back to, I wonder where the first sort of recorded instance of this notion of procrastination came from. Like when, I wonder if, I don't remember whether.
I'm going to find this out because about 10 feet from me is the complete Oxford English Dictionary.
Okay.
And I will look up the word procrastination and I will get the complete history when procrastination was first used.
Oh, wow. And,
yeah.
Well, this is great. I wonder,
the history of words. It's the history of words. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if, you know, when you look at, it goes all the way back to, you know, the philosopher days. The Stoics, or the whether they were grappling with procrastination at that time, even.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think it's always been the problem of wandering minds. You know, in other words, you trained and trained and you disciplined people and you got them to do their job. And then there were these ones that had wandering minds and they just were hard to, you know. And I think there was just a lot of punishment.
Right.
I think it was so funny because we were watching James Nestor, Joe's and, and he was great. I thought he was just terrific, you know, and he was great. You know, I mean, I felt he was Joe said he's a really good person, and I really got that sense that he was a really good person. You know, like, and he was really doing this because he thought it was really beneficial that people should know this about breathing, you know, that breathing through your nose rather than breathing through your mouth. And so we got to the end of it, and we had a debrief with the team. So this is at the end of the day, because I had about 18 members who watched Genius Network, and they were all talking about, you know, the breathing and everything. I said, I'll tell you though, I said, I'd rather be a mouth breather in the 21st century than a nose breather in the 18th century.
That's the best. You say that too, even better than being a king back then,
I said, you know, I mean, if I'm a mouth breather, probably in about 6 months I can correct it, but I correct my situation, but there were a lot of 18th century situations that are not correctable in 6 months, you know, like,
that's
so
true.
Anyway, yeah, so
very funny.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting, but I've been using the elevation training mask now for going on 6 years.
Yeah,
you know, and it's a mask that covers your mouth and nose, keeps your mouth closed, and you have to do all your breathing. And we were in the breakout group with him, and I just mentioned the idea. He says, you're probably, he says, probably anytime during the day, you're probably breathing through your nose, because he said, you've made your lungs, what it does is strengthens your lungs. Your lungs have to get stronger and stronger, because the mask has gauges on it that as you get better and better at it, it restricts the air more and more. And you have to pull it in from your lungs. Your lungs have to. You need the oxygen, but you're getting less air, so you got to pull in. You got to pull in more air, and I've been doing it. And all my tests, where they test out your cardiovascular and everything else, I've got really first class results on that.
VO2.
And then I And then I use CPAP at night because I am a snorer. I've got a 17 and a half inch neck, so that is one of the signs. And I'm over, I think if you're over 50 and you have that, probably you're going to have sleep apnea. So I've had that for 9 years, I think 9 years right now, and that doesn't allow you to breathe through your mouth all night. So that's good. So anyway, it was interesting because, it was so funny that people said, in the old days, you know, before 300 years ago in industrialization, people had straight teeth and their bones were shut. I said,
right.
There wasn't much else working, you know. There
were yeah, that's something.
There's no going back in history for me, I'll tell you.
I wonder how physiologically we're going to change as we enter this new era of Cloudlandia, the Cloudlandian period, as we're kind of the great crossover.
Well, I think this is why there's so much mania about super sports and super fitness and everything right now.
Yeah.
And the reason is they're trying to make exercise, which is, if you do it, it's good for you. And they're trying to make it into almost like a religious form or something,
Right.
I can do a marathon. Well, actually, a marathon isn't good for you, actually.
Right.
Actually, running isn't all that good for you because your knees really aren't supposed to take that kind of pounding, Walking's good, and then you should do some sort of weight strength, get the muscles and doing it. I tell you, I've talked to a lot of people, fitness people, and he said, if you give me a runner against a walker over a 10-year period, he said the walker is in much better condition at the end of 10 years than the runner.
Yeah, I bet that's true. Just because there'd be less even injuries, you can more consistently do it. It's more practical.
I mean,
it's a more practical, applied sort of skill.
Yeah.
Or ability, so, right?
Yeah. But I think, Peter is telling me stuff. He said, this seems really weird. But he said, in 5 years, 10 years, you take a pill and it keeps your muscle at top notch, he says.
That's what Peter Diamandis says. Wow.
Yeah. You know why they'll create that?
Why?
Because people want it.
Because people want it, that's for sure. That's so funny.
People always look at it, they're making money off this. And I said, they're not making money off anything except what people said they wanted.
Right. That's exactly right.
I said, never look at the producer. Always look at the consumer.
Yeah.
The producer is just a dog who's been taught a new trick.
That's funny. And absolutely true. And now, good news is being able to get right to, if you do create something like that, being able to get right to everybody. Your reach is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So why is Lacey such great who?
Yes.
Because Dean needed her.
Yes, that's exactly true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. I'm so excited about so many. My output will... I've already got some.
Well, not only that, here's the thing that's really amazing about all the who, not how. You've just solved a problem for life.
Yes, exactly.
It wasn't a problem you solved for next Wednesday. It was a problem you solved for the rest of your life. And that's the collaboration I have around the who, not how. I just solved a problem for the rest of my life. I can produce major market books with very little effort, or simply based on the effort that I've already put forward, you know, like the quarterly books. So I think this is the real thing. People don't realize master a skill, the skills for life. That's
absolutely. But having it out there in the world, I mean, just the reach, the legs that it's gotten. Mm-hmm. Even it's funny. The great thing, Dan, is funny is I'm getting the reflective glow of the success of Who Not How because of your acknowledgement of and dedication of the book and being in a portion of it. But that's it's funny how people come to me with one of two things. I can tell their scarcity mindset or their abundance mindset by the way they come to me about it. Some people are coming saying, wow, that's so great that you were, it was a beautiful dedication in the book or the whole thing. Dan's really appreciative or really acknowledges you. And then on the other side, people are going, wow, they really took your idea and ran with it there. Like you took something, like you took something from me, right? And it's amazing to see just people are on one side or the other of that. And it's funny.
Yeah. And it's a really, and we've just, you know, we're going through a major jump in our whole approach to our own intellectual property because of the court case, you know, which you know about. And the interesting thing about it is that we're five times better because, somebody decided to take our stuff and not give credit. And, and I said, property is going to be just as important in the virtual world as it was in the mainland, in the Quadlandia. And there's a lot of nonsense going on that, people won't have property. I said, of course they're going to have property. I says, property is the basis of individuality. And I said, what motivation would there be to innovate new breakthroughs if you can profit somehow individually for what you created? I said, you got to have it. You won't have innovation if you don't have property. So anyway, that was my one condition for the book, that your name went up front. I told Ben and Tucker, I said that this is a non-negotiable that has to go on the very first page of the book.
That's great. And I'm so happy to see it out, you know, and that's the thing that people are just like, they don't know. We're 10 quick starts, Dan. We're gushers of ideas like this. It's not the only one, right?
It was so funny. I have to tell you this because Babs is on a Zoom call with her sisters. So she's got two older sisters. And so they've made, a habit during this period of being in touch like they were never in touch with, before the lockdown. Now they're in touch all the time. But anyway, I remember the first time Babs took me home to meet her family, and it was mainly her mother. And she didn't really know that much about the business, you know.
Yeah.
And so this was around 84 or 85. So this is 35 years ago. And so it was just one-on-one coaching. And, but Bab said, it's kind of like he's got these clients and he just keeps coming up with new ideas. And her mother, she says, aren't you worried he's going to run out of ideas?
Right.
and Bab said, I have to tell you, that's not the problem.
Right. Exactly. That's so funny.
Running out of ideas has never been the problem.
That's not the problem.
Yeah. So it is what it is. And then the whole question is, how do you have to organize yourself? So that's more of a solution to you than a problem,
That's exactly right.
And you just came up with a big one. You just came up with a big one.
Yeah. And it'll open up my opportunities to a whole new
audience of people who are visual,
you know, because everything I typically do is auditory, like podcasts and hearing the things. So now to have the video representation of that, that opens up a whole new audience of people who don't hear, you know, people don't
hear. Yeah, but I will tell you this. You're one of the most visual speakers that I've ever, you know, well, I'm visual because I see everything visually. But when you're talking, I'm just seeing the diagrams forming. You know, there's part of my brain where I'm listening to you, but I'm seeing the diagrams. You, I think you have taken it right up to the line of how visual you can be as a speaker, and now you've just moved it across the line so that someone else can actually take your words and actually visualize them. But I think I suspect Lacey's job was pretty easy, knowing how you talk.
That's great, and she's very visual, and I'm a visual person. So I think there may be something to that, that that's why when I'm talking, it's in visual terms.
Yeah.
I'm trying to convey what I see.
I see everything. I see everything in diagram form.
Yeah.
All right. I got the jump.
Okay.
All right. This
always
was a great
pleasure.
One. And I'll be on next Sunday.
Me too.
Okay.
Okay. I'll talk to you then.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.